The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder why a loving God allows suffering in the world. Where is God when innocent people are being attacked by enemies from overseas? Where is God when mob violence loots stores, turns over cars, and kills people? Where is God when innocent people are accused of things they didn't really do? Well, my friend, I have a better question. Where are people? You see, people, human beings, are made in the image of God. No, that doesn't mean God has hands or fingers or toes. It means spiritual image. Like God, we think and create. We create stories, we create paintings, we create buildings, computer programs, businesses. We create families, and we even call that procreation. And I have a better question than where is God? Well, people suffer. Where are people? Where are people when their fellow human beings suffer? Where are our leaders? The Bible speaks against poverty, speaks against murder, speaks against racism. God created the world but gave us responsibility. Henry Ford invented the automobile. Do you blame Henry Ford when there's an automobile accident, or do you blame the driver? Anyway, are the people today who look around and see evil, are they stopping the evil, or are they enabling the evil? Today, of course, is December 7th, Pearl Harbor Day. If you're listening to this as a repeat broadcast, that's the day I recorded it, December 7th, Pearl Harbor Day. Just a few days ago, the possible Democratic nominee for president in 2016, Hillary Clinton, gave a speech about empathizing with our enemies. Now, don't be too hard on her. She's had plenty of examples from our current president. But our president on December the 7th, 1941, was Franklin D. Roosevelt. He rallied the nation. That is, he rallied the nation in this universe, in this quantum reality, in one of those parallel universes. Maybe it was different. Use your imagination for a moment. What would it have been like if President Roosevelt had given a speech like this one? My fellow Americans, before commenting on the nation of Japan, let me first say what is most important. My heart goes out to the families of our brave military who perished in yesterday's tragedy. Of course, we will respond, but our response will be measured. It would be a mistake if we assumed that the actions of a few nutcase aircraft carrier commanders and pilots were speaking on behalf of the entire nation of Japan. After all, the Japanese have added so much to American culture and to the world. I think of the beautiful tea gardens and the peaceful philosophy behind those who learned martial arts. And frankly, I've always been a big fan of sushi. So let's be clear, the high majority of the Japanese do not condone this attack. And it's doubtful that Emperor Hirohito himself approves. Remember, the tradition of venerating and worshiping the emperor is a beautiful religion, one that we should not judge. In fact, such judgment is beyond my pay grade. But I do know this. If a religious element is involved in the worship of Emperor Hirohito, well, then the worship is peaceful, for no religion justifies murder. Now, I know some of you are calling this attack upon Pearl Harbor evil, and often I've been asked if I believe that real evil exists in the world. Well, I do. But I also think we need to have some humility regarding evil, for America is certainly guilty of its own share of evil. We once held slaves, don't forget. True, that ended over 100 years ago, but I'm just saying, slavery once existed. At times like this, we need to understand the other party. Instead of being so quick to write them off as an enemy, why not look at things from their point of view? What are they thinking? How are they feeling? Maybe Japan thought we attacked them. And true, we didn't actually attack them in so many words, but what about that oil embargo? Maybe to them, That was an attack. Our goal, then, on this sober day, is a measured response. Our intelligence is on it. We will locate the exact pilots who bombed Pearl Harbor and bring them to justice in a court of law. If in that process larger conflict ensues, I call upon both sides to show restraint. This is a tragedy, but it would be a much bigger tragedy if anyone came to the mistaken impression that we are at war, or if they looked at Japan as anything but what it is, a peaceful country whose sole ambition is to bring peace and brotherhood to the entire world. Well, fortunately, back on December 7th, neither Obama nor Hillary were our president. And of course, the Japanese culture today is very friendly. But in those days, that was not the case when they attacked us. But in those days, we had a man with a spine as president and with a few moral convictions to boot. Say what you want about Roosevelt. Say what you want about Roosevelt. And actually, I don't care for the man's domestic agenda. But say what you want. Franklin Roosevelt militarily was a commander in chief. The soldiers loved him, and he understood we were really at war. And he knew who the enemy was, and he told us who the enemy was. It wasn't hard. I guess the fact that the enemy attacked our naval base had something to do with it. Today, we have a government which releases known terrorists from Guantanamo, makes deals with terrorists, but didn't lift a finger to help a U.S. Marine who made a wrong turn and ended up in Mexico, and finally public pressure led him out. And our government expresses concern that a policeman who shot a man allegedly resisting arrest, well, they're concerned that this policeman must be the guilty one. And they comment on that issue before the facts are in, even when it's being investigated. They comment before the facts are in, and then they continue to comment when the facts come back as they were presented to the grand jury, and the facts exonerate the police officer, and the grand jury lets him off, and then he still comments. This same president, who talks so much about civil rights but doesn't seem to care about the rights of Christians, they're under assault because of their stand on same-sex marriage, because of their stand on abortion. He'll defend Muslims in a heartbeat, but such freedom of religion doesn't seem to apply to those who don't want to fund abortions through Obamacare, or those who have the audacity to believe marriage is a union between a man and a woman. We'll be looking at the situation in Ferguson today, and we'll also be looking later on in today's show at another situation where a husband and wife pastor team may face jail for refusing to perform same-sex weddings. Sounds like a depressing show, I know. Well, the news can be depressing. We still have to talk about it. We still have to face it. We can't stick our heads in the sand. On the other hand, it is Christmas time, so we won't let the news get us down. We will also have some fun today. We will also celebrate today. Let's start with some fun. Let's rock out for Christmas.
So we can build a little candy home. just gotta bring me back.
Yeah, that's She Daisy. Santa's Got a Brand New Bag, not to be confused with that other song, Papa's Got a Brand New Bag, James Brown. Now, okay, I know how some of my Christian brothers and sisters think. I can hear you all the way on the other side here at Radioland. The moment that song got into its first few verses, somebody out there in Radioland was saying, can I believe my ears? Isn't this supposed to be a Christian radio show? Is that Bob Segal really playing a song about Santa Claus? Well, maybe I should call this so-called Christian apologist and remind him that Christmas is supposed to be about Christ. Yes, thank you. I believe we know that already. Save yourself the call. Save yourself the email. Isn't it interesting? You talk about Christ at Christmas time, the atheists jump all over you. You talk about Santa Claus at Christmas time, the Christians jump all over you. For that matter, I know a lot of Christians who don't want us to celebrate Christmas at all, and they're very self-righteous and sanctimonious about it. They don't want us to do Christmas with Jesus, Santa, or Charles Dickens, because originally, you see, ancient Rome on December the 25th was the pagan holiday of Saturnalia, and they converted that to Christmas. Did they? Oh, my God! Look, if God can convert a soul, he can convert a holiday. As for Santa Claus, there actually was a God-fearing Christian bishop in the 4th century known as St. Nicholas, who allegedly snuck into the home of a poverty-stricken family ready to sell their daughters into slavery and left some gold coins for them so that the family could survive and stay together. That man actually existed, and many believe that particular story about him is true. Naturally, over the years, all kinds of mythology, folklore got added to the mix, from reindeer to flying sleighs to Tim Allen getting fat against his will. But I have no problem with Santa Claus, just so long as parents are careful not to let mythology get mixed up with the truth. My kids, for instance, grew up with Santa as a fun game and tradition. They also learned that only one being is omnipotent. Only one being sees you while you're sleeping and knows when you're awake, and that being is God, not Santa. In any event, we are going to play a song about Christ now. Now, this is one of the oldest Christmas carols ever written. This, too, is kind of an imaginary story. Christ wasn't imaginary, but this story, it's looking at the Virgin Mary from poor Joseph's point of view. Have you ever thought of that? Can you imagine Joseph? He comes home from work one day, and he's engaged to this woman. Betrothal was more than what we would call an engagement, less than what we would call a marriage. So they hadn't consummated anything. They actually hadn't been married. But Mary looks at him and says, well, I have some good news and some bad news. First, the bad news, I'm pregnant. Ha, ha, ha. Now the good news. Now, I know this is going to be hard to believe at first, but honestly, I never slept around. The baby came from God. Okay, the song you're about to hear examines the anger of Joseph, which is finally extinguished by a miracle of baby Jesus. No, this particular story never happened, but there was a real miracle. There was a virgin birth. My atheist friends insist that there isn't. You know what they offer to prove that? Nothing. This is one of the most beautiful carols ever written, and I'm happy to present it through one of the most beautiful versions sung by the charming, the majestic, the fabulous Judy Collins.
Joseph was an old man, an old man was he, when he wedded Virgin Mary in the land of Galilee. When he wedded Virgin Mary in the land of Galilee. Joseph and Mary walked through an orchard green, where were berries and cherries as thick as might be seen. Cherry that brought thee with stones in the street, mother, shall sorrow for me all. Oh, the stones in the street, mother, shall sorrow for me all. On Easter Day, dear mother, my rising up shall be. Oh, the sun and the moon, mother, shall both arise with me. Oh, the sun and the moon, mother, shall both arise with me.
Believe it or not, Bob Siegel is aware that there may be one or two people who disagree with his opinions. To offer your own comments on the topic at hand or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, feel free to contact Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Ladies and gentlemen, are you interested in advancing your cause through the wonderful world of news-making violence? Would you like to also have the best of both worlds, the benefit of violence, without it looking like you personally were responsible? Well, then, this is your lucky day. Step right up for some handy, helpful tips on how to get people angry or stoke the flames of anger that perhaps exists already. It's not so difficult. In fact, you'd be surprised how easily this mission can be accomplished. Keeping the peace takes far more effort. Destroying the peace is simple. So long as you plan things right, anybody can do it with a little help. We begin by understanding that human nature is often at its worst in a group situation. There is something inherently adversarial about bringing a large group of people together in one place for a cause. True, at times it has to be done. After all, important goals need organization, and the more people involved, the better. And yes, public speakers can talk responsibly in front of a group of people should they so desire. However, for those of you who wish to engage in irresponsible speech, you will discover that many, if not most, human beings are easily influenced by strong emotional pleas and fantastic charismatic oratory skills, even when such tools have nothing to do with the truth. You will also find that mob frenzy brings out a behavior most people would restrain if they were discussing the same subject one-on-one over a cup of coffee. And so, when crowds assemble, exploit the assembly. Don't use reasoning or logic. And very importantly, do not confuse anybody with actual facts. How can such exploitation occur, you ask? Just follow these handy-dandy brief lessons that I'm about to share. And by the way, this is good advice for all demagogues, but today's lesson keys in on the town of Ferguson, Missouri, specifically. Our goal is to examine some very successful rioting in reaction to the grand jury's recent decision to not indict Officer Darren Wilson for allegations of racist and criminal motive in the shooting of Michael Brown. Perhaps Ferguson will serve as a template for future instigators. Lesson one, be sure your crowd understands their colors. To accomplish this, you need to solicit the help of clever civil rights activists. In fact, they must be even smarter than the most famous civil rights leader of all, Reverend Martin Luther King. What did he know? After all, he had the audacity to dream of a colorless society, a time when people would not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. King's words are way behind the times. Today's inspirational leaders must explain that when a white police officer shoots a black man, before we have heard all sides of the story, we automatically assume that skin color must have been the reason. On the other hand, when an unarmed white man named Dylan Taylor is shot by a police officer described as not white, as was reported in a much less sensationalized story in Salt Lake City, Utah, well then, skin color has absolutely nothing to do with it. Lesson two, keep repeating that Michael Brown's parents will miss him. Nobody will be unsympathetic to grieving parents. Bring the parents on TV a lot. Keep talking about how much they wish their son was still alive. Never point out that even if it were proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that Michael Brown had been guilty of physically assaulting a police officer, his parents would love him and miss him no less. This would be true of any decent parents, and it would always be understandable. But it says nothing about Brown's guilt or innocence. Lesson three, don't ask the crowd to act as a group think tank by exploring why so many African-American witnesses corroborated Officer Wilson's side of the story in front of the grand jury. If anybody brings that up at a meeting, politely ask him to leave. If he stays, ask him again, but impolitely this time. If he still doesn't leave, break something. Don't worry. Your action will be viewed as nothing more than righteous indignation. Lesson four, make sure the town state, in this case Missouri, has a governor who only uses the National Guard if he isn't afraid of politically correct responses. This way, even though a trained chimpanzee could have predicted that there would be major violence and looting if the grand jury failed to deliver the right decision, quote unquote, the police will not have enough manpower to stop the riots. Even though the National Guard could have been available for backup the moment the police needed them, the violent looting and street vandalism will still be a smashing success. No pun intended. To find the perfect candidate for such reckless inaction, listen carefully for that special governor who comments about the Brown-Wilson case early on. If you hear him say that a vigorous prosecution must now be pursued, then you have your man. And in this case, your man is Governor Nixon. Nixon did not call for a vigorous investigation, mind you. He called for a vigorous prosecution. Such words probably provided insight ahead of time as to whether Missouri's miserable excuse for a governor would be ready with the National Guard. Agitators had a green light. The coast was clear. Lesson five. It helps when our Justice Department is led by a man who plans ahead of time to launch his own investigation regardless of witnesses, forensic evidence, or any other factual determination. And we know we have the best Attorney General possible if he fails to visit Utah just as quickly to investigate the police shooting of an unarmed white man as he rushed to Missouri to investigate the shooting of an unarmed black man. If Eric Holder's track record shows only a fleeting interest in authentic judgment, well, so much the better. Culpability in a scandal such as Fast and Furious is a good sign that you found the right man. We might also want the kind of guy who seems uninterested in pursuing with any real enthusiasm an IRS that cherry-picks which organizations with whom to grant nonprofit status. Lesson six. After the first night of plundering and pillaging, bring in spokespeople who can go on TV and offer obligatory speeches which condemn the violence, but in the same breath remind our country that while such acts are unjustified, of course, we should at least try to understand the anger underneath and how it was percolating for a long time due to America's racist heritage. Lesson number seven, in that same vein, help people to ignore any progress America has made in race relations, such as, the abolishment of slavery, the abolishment of Jim Crow laws, affirmative action, African-American secretaries of state, African-American Supreme Justice, and almost forgot, an African-American president of the United States. Lesson eight, speaking of the president, I just can't imagine anything more helpful than for him to give a speech about how it isn't his place to comment on the situation in Ferguson and then comment anyway. Lesson number nine, Do not be too particular about your allies. Welcome them regardless of their agendas. Those who take advantage of the situation by looting stores will help your cause because it will keep you on the news. These allies are a dime a dozen. Now they can steal that iPad they wanted or grab a free box of Hostess cupcakes with a clear conscience. I mean, they're just doing it for Michael Brown, not because they are evil thugs with swinish behavior. Lesson number 10, throw in something about how Israel is related to the problem. Yeah, Israel. This will sustain the cause, enable the protests to spread all over the country, and solicit the help of people who might not have known Ferguson, Missouri from Mayberry, RFD. A good example can be found in Seattle, Washington, where the Palestine Solidarity Committee marched with a banner that said, "Occupation is a crime. Ferguson to Palestine. Resist U.S. racism. Boycott Israel. Stand up." You see, it never hurts to toss Jews into the mix and draw the passionate anti-Semites into your cause. The irony of stoking one type of racism in order to allegedly fight another kind of racism will be lost on the pea brains. Well, those are the tips. Now, before we adjourn for the day, I leave one last suggestion, and this is of a different nature. There's only one of these. How to reverse this process and turn public opinion against Ferguson riots, even bringing in people who never follow the news and therefore up to now have had no opinion. Suggest a blockade of shopping malls on Black Friday so that customers cannot get into their favorite stores. That ought to do it. This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
Hi, this is Dana Wright here to announce that Bob Siegel has finally entered the 21st century. It had to happen sooner or later. Now, Bob's popular book, I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But... is available in ebook format and can be downloaded to your Kindle or Nook. Whenever Bob speaks, people are eager to purchase this book afterwards. But sometimes parents inform him that their kids will not read anything that they can't put on an e-reader. Well, now that is no longer a problem. So if you want a book that can help everyone in your family offer better answers to good, skeptical questions that people ask about Christianity, go to Amazon.com. or BarnesandNoble.com for I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But by Bob Siegel, now available for download as an ebook.
Do your kids ask you questions about God and the Bible that you can't answer? Sign yourself or your child up for a class with lots of solid answers at educateforlife.org before someone else gives them the wrong answers. Are you tired of not knowing what to say when your friends and family ask you questions about God and the Bible? Get equipped by signing up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone asks you, "How do you know the Bible's true?" do you say something like, "I just know it is"? If you're tired of giving lame answers, sign up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone says that God isn't real, wouldn't it be fun to prove that He is? Quickly, like a verbal ninja? By using science and logic. Sign up for a class at educateforlife.org with Christian apologetics teacher Kevin Conover, and you'll learn how to do that. Educateforlife.org.
Welcome back to KCBQ 1170 and KPRZ 1210. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. A few programming notes. Those of you that have been following the show a number of years will recall that usually in the month of December, I air repeats of our two Christmas specials. And it's usually during the last two Sundays of the month. One is a review of my favorite and least favorite holiday movies. The other is an interview. We had once the privilege of interviewing the niece of the late Hugh Martin, who wrote the second most popular Christmas carol of all time, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Mr. Martin was still alive when we first aired that show in 2000. He is unfortunately the late Hugh Martin now, but he lived a rich, full life. Anyway, we will still air those broadcasts, those holiday shows this year, but they're going to be in a checkered order this time. And that's because on December the 21st, Kevin Conover and I will be interviewing a member of the Jehovah's Witness Kingdom Hall. And this was the only Sunday of the month that worked. So we changed things up a little bit, and therefore our schedule will be rather unusual this month. Right now, of course, you're hearing an original broadcast. Next week, a repeat of our first holiday special. The week after, a new show, Interview with the Jehovah's Witness. And finally, the last week of December, our second repeat Christmas special with Sylvia Lang, niece of Hugh Martin. Well, the latest chapter in a clash between the rights of same-sex couples and religious freedom involves an Idaho wedding chapel where two ordained Christian ministers were given the choice to either officiate same-sex weddings or face legal consequences, which could include jail and a fine as high as $1,000. When husband and wife ministers, Donald and Evelyn Knapp, first began their work at Hitching Post Wedding Chapel, they probably never dreamed they would need to someday call upon the services of Alliance Defending Freedom. That's an organization which specializes in religious and First Amendment rights. Unfortunately, the Knapps are being challenged by the city for having the audacity to stick to their religious convictions and limit marriage ceremonies to the union of a man and a woman. According to ADF attorney Jeremy Tetsko, right now, he says, they are at risk of being prosecuted. The threat of enforcement is more than just credible. The Knapps are in fear that if they exercise their First Amendment rights, they will be cited, prosecuted, and sent to jail. Now, technically, this ministry involves a wedding chapel, and it's not actually organized as a church. Although listed as a religious corporation, it is not a nonprofit organization. This opens up a window for prosecution that churches supposedly are immune from. According to city officials, the Knapps are in violation of local non-discrimination ordinances, a specific one that was passed a year ago, which prohibits discrimination due to sexual orientation. This law is not only about housing or employment, but public accommodation as well, and their wedding chapel falls under the category of public accommodation. City Attorney Warren Wilson said to the Spokesman Review in May, I would think that the Hitching Post would probably be considered a place of public accommodation that would be subject to the ordinance. His words to station KXLY were even stronger. He said a wedding chapel that won't perform ceremonies for same-sex couples was violating the law, at least in theory. And he added, you're looking at a potential misdemeanor citation. Now, for a while, such consequences were only a possibility in the wind because at the time, that the new ordinance passed, same-sex marriage, ironically, was not yet legal in that state. That all changed when the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decided to allow same-sex marriage in Idaho. 2 days later, Hitching Post Wedding Chapel got a phone call from a man who wanted to know if they would perform a same-sex wedding. The Knapps turned down his request. Now, out of a fear that the city could prosecute them, they're filing a lawsuit of their own to prevent such action. ADF attorney says, the government should not force ordained ministers to act contrary to their faith under threat of jail time and criminal fines. The city is on seriously flawed legal ground, and our lawsuit intends to ensure that this couple's freedom to adhere to their own faith as pastors is protected, just as the First Amendment intended. In the ongoing debate about legal same-sex marriage, many conservatives over the years, including myself, have warned many times that it will not stop with allowing homosexual marriage and go on to infringe upon the rights of Christians and others with their traditional values. And we've been laughed at. We've been accused of spreading unwarranted fear. After all, this was merely about separation between church and state. Let the state perform the kinds of marriages it wants. Meanwhile, in church, Christians will still be free to perform or refrain from performing marriages according to their own beliefs. Well, yeah, now that argument makes sense on a certain level, but only if we assume that being constitutional is the only true objective. In point of fact, the phrase separation between church and state is not found in our Constitution anyway. Instead, The First Amendment reads, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. When a pastor is told that he has to perform a same-sex wedding, does that not mean that the free expression of his religion is being prohibited thereof or any other way? It's true that Thomas Jefferson talked about a wall of separation in his letter to the Danbury Baptist, but even if we want to use that phrase, a question is still begging to be asked. How come recent trends show that this separation is not cutting both ways? The Idaho Chapel is not an isolated incident. And we talked about this other one on the radio before. The New Mexico Supreme Court has ruled that same-sex couples have a right to any wedding photography they choose, even a photographer who objects for religious reasons. Elaine Photography, a small home-based company, was ordered to comply to the ruling. And long, long before the New Mexico situation, a New Jersey judge ruled against a Christian retreat house that had declined permission for a same-sex civil union ceremony to be conducted on the property. The judge said that the Constitution, and I'm quoting him, the Constitution allows some intrusion into religious freedom to balance other important societal goals. Ladies and gentlemen, those are chilling words. And at the time of the ruling, New Jersey did not even allow gay marriage anyway. The judge was ruling on behalf of a civil union. It isn't always judges. Mayors like to throw their weight around, too. Remember Chick-fil-A CEO Dan Cathy merely shared his opinion about same-sex marriage in an interview. This resulted in a letter from the late Thomas Menino, who was Boston's mayor at the time. He said, there is no place for discrimination on Boston's Freedom Trail and no place for your company alongside it. This is great. He's telling them, don't bother to set up in Boston. We are indeed, he says, full of pride for our support of same-sex marriage and our work to expand freedom to all people. Well, not to Dan Cathy, evidently. Freedom to all people. We are proud, he says, that our state and our city have led the way for the country on equal marriage rights. Well, folks, public protests came swiftly to the defense of Chick-fil-A, but such words from a city official say something about the political climate we're living in. Some will immediately respond by making a distinction between churches and businesses. Chick-fil-A is a fast food restaurant. Elaine Photography is also a business. Even Hitching Post Wedding Chapel in Idaho, while run by a husband and wife minister team, is not an honest-to-goodness church. Neither is it a nonprofit organization. Those arguments, based upon organizational structure, are a bit weakened by another recent news story, and we talked about this one too. City officials in Houston, Texas, ordered five Christian pastors to turn over any sermons in which they mentioned the Houston Equal Rights Ordinance, the mayor, gender issues, or homosexuality. Now, some bad press and public outcry forced the city to back off. That's the good news. But keep in mind, these were actual churches rather than mere businesses run by Christians. Even so, such classifications should not matter. Lawyers and activists may love those kinds of distinctions, but guess what? The First Amendment says nothing about organizational paradigms or nonprofit status. Naturally, our forefathers did not intend for personal freedom to extend to the point where one can physically harm another human being in the name of religion. And for this reason, laws which forbid restaurants or motels from refusing service on the basis of race or on the basis of sexual preference, I do think those laws are appropriate. Everybody needs a place to sleep. Everybody needs to eat. Keep in mind that Chick-fil-A wasn't refusing service to anybody. The CEO was simply stating a personal opinion. But he was kind of dumb. He thought he was still in America. And he may have done so publicly, but the right to freedom of speech is guaranteed in the same amendment that provides religious freedom, interestingly enough. And the urgency of finding lodging for the night cannot be compared to a same-sex couple has all the time in the world to find liberal pastors who would be only too happy to perform their wedding. There are countless gay churches or liberal churches willing to marry any kind of couple. Photographers are not in short supply either. Many secular photographers do not care what they photograph so long as they are being paid. I want you to think about this. Supposing an evangelical conservative Christian couple sought out an openly gay pastor, asking him to perform a traditional wedding complete, and they said, we want the works, we want the traditional words about marriage being ordained by God as an ordinance between men and women. Should that person be expected to affirm such beliefs if he doesn't share them? We'll be right back.
Music.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out his online column, Forbidden Table Talk, published and hosted weekly by Communities Digital News. Bob is also a regular contributor to San Diego Rostra. We invite you to visit Bob's website at www.bobsiegel.net. You can listen to previous radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and find information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. Bobsiegel.net. We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Now, right before the break, I posed a question. Let me pose it again. Supposing an evangelical Christian couple sought out an openly gay pastor, asking him to perform a traditional wedding complete with traditional words about marriage being ordained by God as an ordinance between men and women. Should he be expected to affirm such beliefs if he does not share them? I don't think he should. Those aren't my beliefs, but I want him to be free to have his beliefs. You see, I'm consistent enough to look at it that way, but dedicated liberals, for the most part, they tend to avoid those kinds of comparisons. Instead, they are quick to turn the gay plight into an allegory with previous struggles in the history of our country. By couching the debate under headings such as equality or civil rights, they often forget how many African Americans and Latinos resist that alleged parallel. 70% of California's African American voters cast their ballots in favor of Proposition 8, which amended the California Constitution by defining marriage as a union between a man and a woman. And a little more than half of California's Hispanic voters joined them, according to the National Election Pool 2008. Reverend William Owens, head of the Coalition of African American Pastors, is himself a civil rights activist. In 2003, he spoke to CNS News about the comparison between gay rights and the African American plight. Here's what he said. He says, every morning I wake up, I look in the mirror, and I see a black man, and there's absolutely nothing I can do to change the color of my skin. They, meaning the gay people, those who believe in same-sex marriage, he says, they are not suffering what we suffered. And I sympathize with people who face discrimination. Every person should be treated with dignity and respect, but what they're going through does not compare to what we went through. Now, Reverend Owen went on to say that changing the definition of marriage will be, his own words, devastating to all our families. But apparently, the true militant gay agenda is less about equal protection under the law and more about someday making it against the law to even express the opinion that homosexuality is wrong. That goal has been openly, shamelessly stated. As far back as 1987, the plan was laid out. Jeff Levy, a militant rights activist, in a speech for the National Press Club in Washington, said, we are no longer seeking just a right to privacy and a protection from wrong. We also have a right, as heterosexual Americans already have, to see our government and society affirm our lives. Now, ladies and gentlemen, how do you insist that an entire society affirm something without challenging freedom of speech? What about those who cannot in good conscience affirm a homosexual lifestyle for religious or other reasons? When one group of people demands affirmation, how does the First Amendment apply to everybody? In fairness, militant gay activists do not speak for all homosexuals. Many gay people simply wish to be left alone, and I don't blame them. Others, such as openly lesbian radio talk show host Tammy Bruce, bravely challenges the militant agenda, and she wrote a book called The New Thought Place. Despite these cooler heads, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, or at least the sympathy of certain courts and politicians. Face facts. There is nothing about today's political climate which suggests that America is not headed down the same Orwellian road where other countries have long since embarked and completed their journey. In Ireland, the Prohibition of Incitement to Hatred Act of 1989, it's been around a long time. This act, and I'm quoting it, forbids incitement to hatred on account of race, religion, nationality, or sexual orientation. Well, we're all against hatred, but you need to understand this law includes public speaking, broadcasts, and written materials. And one would think that a hateful motive would be in the eye of the beholder, but not in Ireland. Violation of this law includes insulting, and that actual word is used in the language of the law. And sometimes a person only has to disagree and he'll be accused of insulting. Similar laws exist today in England, Norway, and Sweden. If America's current controversy was only about the rights of same-sex couples to get married, many who disagree with that lifestyle could still live with it. We may not like the situation, but we could live with it. Unfortunately, we are starting to move far beyond the mere question of wedding ceremonies. Freedom of religion and freedom of speech should be a concern to every American citizen, be they gay or straight, liberal or conservative, Republican or Democrat, Christian or atheist. If you don't fight for the opinions you disagree with, it may just be your own opinion that is outlawed next time. Well, if you'd like to weigh in on any of this, you can reach me on Twitter, on Facebook, directly by email, questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel, SIEGEL.net. And of course, I had some fun, although it was a very serious subject. I had some fun earlier on today's show where I was talking about how to start a riot. And of course, we're not really trying to start a riot. It was satire. And when it was published on my column, they wrote satire because sometimes people take you out of context. And I got a lot of comments on that column. Mary Beth, Fred, Virginia, Rochelle, Sarah, and Patty all like what I have to say. Michael Hausner is a peer. He has his own talk radio show. I've been on as a guest. Got to have him on as a guest, too. But anyway, he read that column. He said, brilliant. Barry Jantz, my director on the San Diego Rostra, read this publication on Communities Digital News, and he wrote to me, you rock. Oh, I have a great respect for Barry, so I was very flattered. Larry says, insightful and funny. Wolfman says, for whatever reason, deranged Democrats constantly attack our Constitution and our Bill of Rights. Bernie says, great article, tells it exactly like it is, refreshing to hear a voice of reason in an otherwise atmosphere of hateful rhetoric. This is from Chris in Texas. He says, Bob, regarding your last article on Ferguson, I think it was spot on. What scares me is how obviously the real story was the opposite of what the media said. It just seems Obama is so obviously manipulating the black community. That is creepy. Even more creepy is that apparently a lot of people can see it too, but are afraid to say anything. As I said in an email to you a long time ago, usually you have to try hard to see the deception in a politician. But with Obama, it seems so obvious that I feel like the boy in the emperor has no clothes. Well, that's an interesting analogy, Chris. I hear you, friend. We live in sad, deceptive times, and it's people like you who know how to think outside the box, or who know how to think, period, who suffer first, because you see what's going on, and it makes you sad. Unfortunately, as things get worse, those who do not heed the warnings will also suffer, but it may be too late. However, I do want to point out many African Americans do not follow Obama. This is from Becky. And she's asking a Bible question. She says, hi, Bob. I hope you enjoyed your Thanksgiving. Recently, I have been hearing a lot of negative criticism about the New International Version, that it left out thousands of words and that one of the translators was gay with an agenda. Which Bible translation would you say is most accurate? Thank you and God bless, Becky. Well, hi, Becky. I did hear of a newer version of NIV that tried to use gender-neutral language, and I disagree with that. But the original version is also still being sold, and that one I like. Now, when you wrote me, I had not heard of any gay agenda. I did look into it, and it seems there were some openly gay people, or perhaps a little more in the closet gay people that were on the committee. But I can guarantee you the translation did not suffer. As a matter of fact, in the original NIV, it's just an excellent translation. One of my seminary professors, Robert Alden, participated in translating the Old Testament. I can assure you that he had academic integrity, and I believe the others on the committee at that time did too. Now, the two best translations are the NIV and the NASB, New American Standard Bible. NIV does, as a matter of fact, paraphrase in a few places because sometimes the literal translation is not enough. There's also the question of catching the spirit of it, what an ancient Greek or Hebrew would have felt and thought when they read a certain phrase. On the other hand, I also want to see what the literal translation was, and NASB provides that. For this reason, I use both. Hope this helps. Now, as a matter of fact, what these this questions of Becky reminded me that often I get a more general question. Why are there different versions of the Bible? In our last few minutes, I'll discuss that. We may not get through all of it, but we can complete it another time. Well, other different versions, unless you're referring to the Apocrypha, which is a section in some Bibles included alongside the New and the Old Testaments, we do not actually have different versions of the Bible, but rather different translations. This is nothing unique to the Bible. All ancient works have numerous translations from numerous translators because scholars and linguists enjoy making their own translations. Sometimes they enjoy using different synonyms for words. For example, a word describing the size of a rock might translate as large or big, but in any translated by a real team of scholars, the differences are minute. We'll see you next week.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.